There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back, listener to the 45th. I am here this week with Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
Where the hell have you been?
I have been not here. I was actually in the Galapagos for a little over a week, and it was fantastic.
I saw some pictures, and I know you were like, is the Galapagos totally off the grid? Because you were like, I got no internet, I got nothing.
There was none. Where we were, there was zero internet for a full week, which was kind of amazing. But also kind of stressful because I didn't know there'd be zero internet. So I never told anyone that I'd be not like at all reachable. But there was like zero contact outside world for Saturday to Saturday, basically.
Well, were you afraid that like the United States might not exist as a nation when you got back? And you have no idea because you've got no internet?
No, because I wouldn't want to ruin my vacation. So you know what? Better off to find out after.
That's true. So how was it? I've just seen pictures. It was amazing. I just saw you surrounded by all kinds of like seals and wildlife and...
It was really great. I've always wanted to go there. And it's a interesting and complicated situation there as well, politically. But overall, they've done an amazing job in preserving the environment there. It was really interesting seeing sort of like the wild areas, uninhabited parts, comparing it with how it looks now in the various... There's only a few cities there, and they're small.
Are there a lot of tourists? Is it like
there
really
are.
Overrun?
There are tons of tourists. It is, well, I don't know what overrun means, but they do a really good job of managing it and minimizing the impact on the environment while having a very sizable amount of tourists come through every year. But it's incredible. I mean, I just want the finches alone I've always wanted to see.
Oh, yes. Darwin's finches. And I saw some of the fish you caught. Did you eat them?
Yes.
Were they delicious?
Yes, indeed. It was fantabulous. The problem, though, like, I feel like a vacation, the whole goal is to, like, rejuvenate yourself and, like, get back into it.
That's what they say.
Yeah. But I'm just more like, you know what? Not working is awesome. How do I go back to not working again? That was really great.
How do I turn this into... You could just fish forever. Live off the land.
How do I make this happen?
Yeah. Well, if you can figure out a way to podcast from the Galapagos, maybe you can make it happen.
Yeah, there might be some ways. The internet's like a necessary predicate there.
Maybe one of those Wi-Fi balloons or something. I don't know. There might be a way. It's a matter of time before Google Fiber arrives on the in the islands. I'm pretty sure of it. But anyway,
so not.
You missed a very eventful week, I got to say.
I did. Yeah. I did. And it was very strange coming back and seeing it all. And it was, I mean, for instance, the Las Vegas attack. I didn't know about it. I guess it happened right after I left.
Oh,
so
wow.
I didn't hear about it for a while. And it was just kind of like, well, of course one happened. That's how we live now. That's what life is like now.
You expect it every so often, yeah. Mm.
And I guess in general, it really brought home for me that what's going on right now with Trump and the 45th, it's going to keep going till Mueller makes a move. Like, every new scandal, every new crisis means nothing. We've gotten used to this intolerable but now tolerable daily grind of chaos and stupidity. And it doesn't matter how stupid or chaotic or bad it gets. Nothing will change until Mueller comes back and we see what he has.
Well, you know what? I feel like there was actually an uptick in the crazy. I mean, I know considering what this year has been like, it sounds like a stretch. But I feel like, especially the last week, I'm like, between the executive orders, the tweets, I feel like Trump is like frantically trying to destroy as much as he can before Mueller gets to him. I feel like the pendulum's swinging closer to him and he's just like, I gotta break some shit up before I head out of here. And it's been a crazy, crazy week. But so let's start off. We've got a whole bunch of things to talk about in our like a little bit of a news roundup, and then we're going to talk about a few issues a little more in depth. I thought this would be fun to do. I don't know if we'll do it every week, but maybe we can. This week in Trump tweets. I just use this Trump tweet tracker that's online. So in the week that we're covering for this episode, he tweeted 16 times, and it actually feels like 60 times, so I was surprised it was only 16. But here's the thing. Almost half of those tweets were about the fake news, which is not unusual for our president. He's been talking about that forever. What is unusual this time, though, is that he specifically and numerous times called on the FCC to revoke network licenses of certain organizations. I mean, he was targeting NBC this time for a report that they ran. But that was kind of another level of, oh, wow, First Amendment. What about that? Crazy.
And is it a new level, though? It just we're one of those countries where it happens now. That's just a thing that we deal with and that it happens and exists in our world. And again, nothing's going to change. He can outright demand that NBC stop being allowed to broadcast and nothing would happen.
Right.
Well, I mean, he wouldn't succeed in doing it, but he could just say that. And we would, you know, things would go on as they had before.
I certainly wasn't shocked. I thought it was interesting that there were some conservative commentators and also legislators who were like, oh, well, this is just going too far. And I'm like, well, have you not been paying attention?
Oh, there were? I didn't see any. So that's good.
Yeah,
to know.
They were because, you know, free market and all. So that was a little bit of a thing. But, you know, what's interesting is about this is, you know, the FCC commissioner, Ajit Pai, who is a Trump appointee. He's like in a real bind right now because obviously he can't really say anything one way or the other. So he's kind of quiet about it. But, you know, technically the FCC can't really shut down networks anyways. They don't license networks. They license broadcast stations. And I mean, I've actually read like serious analysis about whether they can do this. They would have to go like station to station to station and legally shut them down if they violated some FCC rules. So it just seems like they wouldn't do it. But
He doesn't even know what licenses are, what they mean. He has no conception of what means being licensed here. And in reality, the current structures wouldn't allow what he's proposing. But that doesn't mean he wouldn't get a new way of doing it or trying it.
Yeah.
I think I'm not overly optimistic in thinking he couldn't succeed here, but he could say everything he wants.
It makes me remember how, like, when maybe it was the first week or second week we started the podcast, you were talking about, I mean, very emphatically that what's happening here is like an actual attack. This administration is an attack on our democracy, and it's going to hurt like democratic institutions. And I remember you saying that so long. It feels like so long ago.
I think I've reached honestly a stage of total pessimism, I don't know if it was being away for a week or what it was or whatever, but at this point, I just don't see much hope. And part of me thinks that America as we knew it is never going to live up to its potential. Like, we can't come back from this. It's done.
No, we'll come back. Don't say that.
How do you come back from this? How do you come back from being a state that could elect and support someone who is demonstrably and plainly incompetent and terrible?
Yeah.
And crazy and wants to harm other people. Like, I would never trust us. I don't trust us now. I wouldn't do a deal with the U.S. that didn't involve cash.
Right. And actually, that's a good point because that's one of the fallouts of the Iran deal decertification. We'll talk about that in a bit. But I want to talk about what our president has been up to this week, other than golfing, which he's been doing a lot of. But this week, Trump, and he wasn't the only one from at least, you know, connected to the administration, appeared at the Values Voter Summit, which is a annual conference, a conservative conference, happens in D.C. I don't know a lot about it, but from their website, it says that it was created in 2006 to provide a forum to help inform and mobilize citizens across America to preserve the bedrock values of traditional marriage, religious liberty, and sanctity of life. So it sounds like it's an anti-marriage equality, pro-life type of conference. 3,000 attendees from this country and others. It's one of the top 10 political events of the year, apparently. I mean, it's like it's a real big deal. But it is noted to be, the Southern Poverty Law Center calls it a rogues gallery of the radical right and a hate group gathering. So we can hear what the president had to say to this group.
In America, we don't worship government, we worship God. The American founders invoked our Creator four times in the Declaration of Independence. Four times. How times have changed, but you know what? Now they're changing back again. Just remember that. We are stopping cold the attacks on Judeo-Christian values. You know, we're getting near that beautiful Christmas season that people don't talk about anymore. They don't use the word Christmas because it's not politically correct. You go to department stores and they'll say Happy New Year and they'll say other things and it'll be red. They'll have it painted, but they don't say, well, guess what? We're saying Merry Christmas again.
I mean, you know what I thought was interesting when I listened to this? As somebody who is not a Christian in a Christian country, I grew up participating in public school. I only went to public schools. Participating in every single Christmas concert. I mean, name a Christmas song or hymn. I can sing it, okay? I played one of the three wise men in middle school. Okay, so, I mean, it's, to me, it's so odd that anybody thinks there's an attack on Christmas when I'm like, most people, even when they don't want to celebrate Christmas, are celebrating Christmas. I mean, in this country. And, you know, dog whistles, I guess. I don't know.
It's an attack on having people who are not Christian.
Yeah, that's probably what
it is. In America. Like, it's, they don't want to have to say something other than Merry Christmas. No one's ever forcing anyone to say not Merry Christmas. But if you're talking to someone who's not Christian, you're probably not going to say it. Or hell, maybe you will anyway, because that's what you should say. It doesn't mean anything now.
I mean, I'm not going to say Merry Christmas to my Jewish friends. That's a stupid. Why would I do that?
Because you forget. I don't know. I'm not religious. So, like, for me, it's like, whatever.
It's Santa Claus.
Yeah, like, Merry Christmas time.
Yeah. I do think it's fair to say that most observant Jews would say, well, no. It, you know, Christmas is not exactly part of a Judeo-Christian tradition.
But, like, it's...
But, you know, clearly the president was impacted by being surrounded by these really kind spiritual people, because he immediately announced that this week is going to, or this past week was officially National Character Counts Week. And the official statement from the White House on National Character Counts is all about, you know, developing good character and family values and all these things, the kind of stuff that this summit stands for, and definitely the kind of stuff that Trump represents when we think about him.
The fact that Religious Right supports and essentially elected Donald Trump is proof that the whole movement is corrupt in the core. I mean, Trump is no way a values person. Like, he doesn't know what the Bible is, hardly. Has he ever gone to a church service in, like, the past decade?
I don't know. Even as a president, I don't know if he's gone.
I mean, he's not religious. He doesn't know what the Bible means. He has no conception of, like, you know, historical tradition and religion. And he does nothing to show it in his daily life. Like, look at all the clips of him from, like, even the mid-2000s, like his Howard Stern stuff, where he's
right.
grossly talking about barging on teenage girls in the locker room because he paid for the pageant so he can.
Well, you know, I mean, that takes me to a kind of an observation about these religious groups. And, you know, I see this not just among evangelical Christians, but I see the same kind of hypocrisy in other religious groups, including Muslims. Just recently, like, we're having these scandals about different, like, religious leaders, Muslim religious leaders who are being outed for being, like, womanizers, or they're doing, like, highly unethical stuff online.
Was this on your Facebook? Because I saw that and I was super confused.
It's all over the place, yeah, and it's, like, a big, big thing. But, you know, what's happening is, like, especially the conservatives are, like, our religious right is just angry. They're like, don't out these people. They represent us. And I'm like, they don't. That's the whole point, is like, they are basically undermining the very values that you say you stand for, which is kind of what's happening here. But Trump wasn't the only one who showed up there. Seb Gorka, who I'm happy to announce, blocked me on Twitter, which means I'm doing something wrong.
Me?
Why didn't he block you? It's a trophy. It's my Twitter trophy. And Bannon also spoke. And you know what? This is what Bannon said, a couple of things that were really kind of freaky. First, he says, the AP reports that Bannon took the platform to directly attack the Republican establishment. And this is what he said, quote, "Now, the AP story today talks about Bannon enlisting the value voters in his war against the Republican establishment. And he said, this is not my war. This is our war. And you all didn't start it. The establishment started it. But I will tell you one thing. You are going to finish it." So he is pitting this group, these value voters, directly against the Republican establishment. He's not identifying Democrats as the enemy here. He's identifying the GOP. They are really wanting to dismantle this party.
And that's why on Monday they had Trump appear with Mitch McConnell at a kind of surreal press briefing.
Was that today?
Yeah, it was today.
Missed it. I was out all day.
Yeah, so this is Monday for those listening on Tuesday. And it was the usual shit show, what you expect.
Darn, I missed the shit show.
Like, even when the questions were better than usual, it's still so frustrating that no one ever asked concrete questions of Trump. And maybe if they did, he would just bat it away. And there were a few concrete ones.
I have seen it so many times.
Someone did point blank ask him, "Are you going to fire Mueller?" And Trump said, "No, I'm not." So that's good. That's kind of question we need. Like, just no nonsense. Force him to give an answer. Someone tried to get him to name one Obama policy he would not try and get rid of, and he couldn't name any. Of course, he was like, basically, all I'm going to go. And that's good, too. But, like, most of the questions, you're like, oh, God, he's not going to answer that any kind of way. And even when the questions didn't require substantive answers, if he ever tried to touch policy, it just was horrifying word salad.
What was the point of the – why did they call the presser? What was the point?
It was to show unity between – Mitch McConnell and Trump just, like, expressed how much they were working together. And at the very end, Trump, like, held Mitch McConnell's hand.
Aww,
it was kind of weird.
That's,
I know,
really sweet.
It was more awkward. It was like a stare thing, too. So I'm like, really? Maybe it's going back to what British Prime Minister said about Trump being scared of stairs.
It was a stair thing. Okay, that actually explains it.
Yeah, but so anyway, it was more to show, like, and Mitch McConnell gave his little speech about how I'm here to win elections. People like, he didn't say Roy Moore, I don't think, but people like that are not going to win in the general election, even though they win the primary, and we have to stop this scourge from taking over the Republican Party.
He said that at the press conference,
well,
right?
That's my interpretation of it.
Oh, that's your interpretation. Okay.
But it's not that much of a stretch, though. What he was saying was that these guys can't win past the primary, and people who don't win the general don't get to make laws. They go home. So we're going to make
sure.
But
don't you think Trump actually proves that wrong? I mean, didn't Trump prove that wrong? I mean, and that to me seems totally counter to what Trump and Bannon are saying all along. That these
They can win, but they don't always.
They can, but they don't always.
Like, some of them are just too far nuts, even for, like, okay, Roy Moore's probably going to win. God help us all. He will probably be a senator. But it is not impossible that a Democratic challenger here could have a chance. And there's one who's making a very strong case for it, because Roy Moore is out there. Like, Roy Moore got kicked off the Alabama Supreme Court because he would not enforce the law. Mm-hmm. He wants gay people to, like, disappear, basically.
Yeah.
And everything he does is pretty, basically, a right-wing radio fantasy. But more so. And there's a real tension here because this wing of the party could destroy the wing that actually gets elected usually and has the hope of doing anything in Congress, although maybe they don't have a chance either.
Well, I mean, they're forcing them further to the right, although I didn't think that could happen after the Tea Party, but it is happening because I feel like what's happening now is the emergence of these people, which is really like white nationalist alt-right, which is even further gone than the Tea Party. I mean, they're making things hard for the traditionalists. I mean, I don't know where Kid Rock falls into this, but apparently even he has a chance. While I travel quite a bit for work, the truth is I do the majority of my work from home, like a lot of other folks. But here's the thing, you can't do all your work from home because once in a while you gotta actually meet people. And in today's digital business world, while we can do a lot of stuff online, well, a face-to-face meeting still matters. And sometimes finding spaces for those face-to-face meetings is kind of hard because you end up going to a public place or you gotta pay for a room. But now you can skip the noisy coffee shops and the expensive hotel conference rooms and just book yourself a DaVinci meeting room. DaVinci provides you instant access to 5,000 incredibly affordable meeting rooms in well-known office locations in every single city. And it's not a hassle to get yourself a meeting room. All you gotta do is just search online, book your room, and meet up. And your DaVinci meeting room comes fully staffed and equipped with all the latest tech and high-speed internet. So whether you need a day office or a conference room, a boardroom, a training space, well, DaVinci has what you need to make your next business meeting a success. And best of all, their meeting rooms start at just $10 an hour. Can you believe that? 10 bucks an hour. And all sorts of folks are using it. Entrepreneurs, startups, and Fortune 500 companies all enhance their images with professional meeting spaces from DaVinci. So book your space now at DaVinciMeeting.com/45. And guess what? The first hour is free. It's on them. That's DaVinciMeeting.com/45. And your first hour will be totally free. Terms and conditions apply. For details, see DaVinciMeeting.com/45. Where are you holding your next meeting? Value Voter Summit aside, I thought this was interesting because you have these folks, the Value Voter Summit, at the same time. somebody that you don't think about when you think about traditional values actually has put a bounty on Trump's head. And I'm talking about Larry Flynt. Did you hear about this?
I did. The $10 million bounty for evidence leading to impeachment.
I thought that was awesome. I mean, considering, you know, how Trump used to... Didn't Trump put up, what, $1 million for Obama's birth certificate or half a million?
$5 million. Never pay.
Yeah. Never paid it.
He never would have paid anyway.
This is great, though. I don't know how he's going to find anything, but this might help produce some video footage and audio footage that we haven't seen before. I thought this was kind of interesting. I mean, like, I don't know. Hustler. Go for it.
Yeah. The way I saw it from his tweets, I guess, he was kind of portraying it as like, why the hell not? So I think it seems a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time, you know, if it works,
it
works.
I don't think Trump has responded, though.
But, like, I am not remotely convinced that PP tape would have any effect on Trump's presidency.
Oh, God. Really? Is it that bad?
He bragged about sexually assaulting women, so I don't really see how a consensual PP tape
But a visual.
Breaks the bank.
Okay.
The visual, well, you know, that's true. I, you know, it could be the visual is so horrifying that there's sort of a visceral, non-rational reaction to it.
Yeah. Well, there are reports, some folks or producers, somebody who worked at The Apprentice saying that they have footage, they have audio or video or something of Trump calling black people by the N-word and I think disparaging gays as well. I don't know, something like that. And I, again, but.
Anti-Semitic and all sorts. Yeah, right. Yeah.
That might just bolster his base.
Yeah, and why it kind of goes back to the whole thing with the Access Hollywood tape.
Yeah,
you know, that was it was leaked to the Washington Post. That's how it came out. NBC didn't do it, so they wouldn't do it here either. I don't think with the regards to the Apprentice tapes.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't do what you think?
Release it?
You think
they
at
could
all?
If they wanted to? But they're not going to.
Well, I wish they had done it at the right time. It might have helped, but at this point, I don't. Like you said, it's hard. I don't even know anymore. It's hard to gauge like what it is. Would maybe eating a puppy? I don't know. All right, so let's move to a couple more. Not that these are not serious topics, but a little more serious than Hustler, I guess. But things are ramping up a little bit with North Korea, as if it couldn't get worse. And I want to play a clip here of Secretary of State Tillerson on kind of this in a recent interview talking about this uptick in aggression between the two countries.
So it's a combination of economic, diplomatic pressure, and then the president building a very strong message to North Korea that you will engage with us at some point to solve this. Because we are not going to allow you to have nuclear weapons. And if I have to take the ultimate decision, the tough decision, the hard decision, the one I don't want to take decision, I will. And so I think in North Korea, we have completely unified the international community, including North Korea's previously closest allies now are aligned with us. I think that's a significant achievement from a foreign policy standpoint for this president.
Oh, God. Is the word choice there deliberate or just like a slip of the tongue? And I don't know which is worse.
Oh, no. He actually means real bomb. That's not figurative.
Was that like a planned, intentional statement? I guess it was, but...
I would say this. I would say that given the weird, like, kind of counter messaging that's coming from Tillerson and Trump on this issue, like when Tillerson was in China, negotiating with them, talking to them about dealing with North Korea. That's when Trump tweeted, don't waste your time, dear Secretary of State. You're great, but, you know, North Korea doesn't listen to anybody. And this is happening as Tillerson is in China working on this issue.
I think I missed that. I did not know that happened.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was really kind of odd. And so Tillerson keeps insisting that, no, we're going to negotiate. At the same time, Trump keeps saying, there's no point in negotiating. We keep negotiating. It's never worked. No regime, you know, no administration in this country has been able to figure it out through negotiations. So we're not going to do it. Now, what's happening that's making this a little more tense right now, because, you know, North Korea does keep threatening different U.S. territories. They threatened Guam before. They're doing it again because next week there's going to be a joint naval exercise between the U.S. and South Korea. And so in response to that, I mean, it is apparently a routine exercise, but at the same time, we're sending in some other like destroyer ships that have not been present in the region before, which maybe is making them nervous. So they have now said that they will, they've threatened to launch ballistic missiles near Guam. I don't know if that means on Guam, but a researcher at a North Korean foreign ministry, it's called the Institute for American Studies, the North Korean Foreign Ministry, warned that this joint exercise, as well as a flight by two American B-1B bombers that happened last week, would compel North Korea to, quote, take military counteraction. I personally think, and John Kelly also told reporters that he had a great concern about Guam and the U.S. citizens living there. So I personally think Trump is really, really dying for a war. Like, he really wants one. It's going to be Iran or North Korea. And I asked Siraj what he thought, like, who was going to get it first. What do you think?
We're screwed either way. Like, doesn't matter. I mean, it's not.
I think North Korea is more dangerous.
Close to an accident. Yeah, I think North Korea. Iran, it's long term. I mean, that's kind of, it's a disaster. But I don't think it's necessarily sort of hairpin trigger there. With North Korea, we're getting to the territory where one bad accident leads to bad messaging, leads to one side or the other freaking out unnecessarily, and that's how wars begin.
And we've had a number of accidents. I mean, just I think in the last couple of months, there were a couple of carriers that had, like our own carriers in the area had an accident, but they just injured each other. But it wasn't like, you know, but you're right, it doesn't take a lot, but there's so much provocation on the part of Trump to get this guy to do something. And I wonder if he's And this seems to almost be his strategy on so many things, is just provoke, provoke, provoke until he gets some kind of a reaction. And North Korea, I think they know that if they do take an action, it's going to be over for them, but...
They do, but they can't know. How, at this point, can they be sure? If they see something that might be an attack, they can't be confident it's not one.
I guess the thing is, you know, after Puerto Rico, I feel like Trump is like, Guam who? Guam what? I don't think he cares. I don't think any U.S. lives and dangers in that territory would matter to him anyway. So I think he might think it's a risk worth taking.
I mean, lives in California don't matter to him, apparently. He has yet to address the fires there.
Yeah, over...
Because they didn't vote for him. Like, Trump never, ever tweets anything or says anything nice about states that didn't vote for him. Only states that voted for him does he express any concern for whatsoever.
Isn't that crazy?
He's open about it, too. Even at the press conference today, he was talking about how he's going to get great health care for the states that voted for him. Like, there's more states out there, you know? You're president of all of them.
He always forgets, like, his inaugural address, which was kind of scary, but he did keep saying, I'm everybody's president. But anyway. So let's move on to Iran, which is, I think, number two on the list for countries Trump wants to invade or go to war against or whatever. What Trump did this week, he decertified the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. That is the Iran deal, as is known popularly. And he's been talking about this for a long time, how it's like the worst deal we ever made. He talks about it like it's like a bad deal at a car, like you went to go buy a car and you got like a terrible deal. But the decertification, what that means is this, basically. The way it works is that Congress requires the president to like certify this agreement every 90 days. And they have to certify, the president has to certify that Iran is upholding the agreement.
The Iranian regime has committed multiple violations of the agreement. For example, on two separate occasions, they have exceeded the limit of 130 metric tons of heavy water. Until recently, the Iranian regime has also failed to meet our expectations in its operation of advanced centrifuges. The Iranian regime has also intimidated international inspectors into not using the full inspection authorities that the agreement calls for.
So what Trump is saying, basically, he's been making this argument that Iran is not abiding by the terms of the agreement. They are failing all kinds of different terms of the agreement. And nearly everybody in the world is saying that is not true. Including
his own government.
His own government. Defense Secretary James Mattis said that Iran has technically complied with its restrictions. The International Atomic Energy Association has validated their adherence. All of the European Union, basically all the other partners of the agreement are like, this is not true, and we are basically going to stay in this agreement. So even if he doesn't certify it, it doesn't mean the agreement dies. I mean, like, it's a multinational agreement, and others are still part of it. But this is what Trump is doing. And I think I feel like he's doing this over and over again. When it comes to DACA, I think he's kind of tried to do this with healthcare. Is he's now put the ball in Congress's court.
So just for everything. He never does anything himself. He just blames Congress for whatever doesn't happen.
It's a brilliant, he's always washing his hands. And there's mm-hmm. no, it's like, it's always a win-win for him. Because mm-hmm. What happens now that Congress has 60 days to decide whether or not to pull out of the nuclear deal. So if they pull out, it's bad. If they stay in, it's going to play badly for the base, right? Because this is one of those promises that Trump made. And I feel like, you know, all he's showing his base that, listen, I'm doing everything I said I could. It's these people who are holding it up. So,
and he also has no clue what's actually in the Iran deal. I mean, he doesn't even know what he's opposing. Yeah. He just thinks it's bad because Obama did it.
So, well, that's one of the questions. Like, what's happening here? Is it only because, do you think he's just kind of rolled back everything that Obama's doing? Or
yes.
Just that's his philosophy? If Obama
that's
did it,
that's his philosophy.
Okay.
Yeah. He everything Obama did must be bad by definition, and he's going to undo it. He has no positive goals, really.
Just undo shit.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who are being a little more charitable, saying this is a very strategic way to get Congress to act and to do things, to, you know, like pass comprehensive immigration reform and you know, come up with a better Trump care or health care plan, you know, since they're not doing it.
Destroy everything so they have to take action. I mean, it's a thing you can do, I guess, but it's hard to see that any good could come from it. I mean, they may take action now because he's breaking the country apart. And they may find it in them to try and fight against that. But that doesn't I have trouble seeing how that can be strategic in a way that matters.
Yeah. Well, they've got 60 days to do this. But, you know, one thing I thought was interesting when I was like reading up on the background of this was, you know, a lot of times Trump makes these decisions against his against the advice of, you know, other seniors in government and his own advisors. But here, apparently, like Tillerson and others are actually on the same page as him. And apparently in September, Tillerson had a meeting of the countries that are part of this agreement. And so, you know, these countries are there. Iran was there. And Tillerson kind of went full tilt on them. I mean, he said, lifting the sanctions as required under the terms of this agreement has enabled Iran's unacceptable behavior. And we have more pounds. Our hair is gray, meaning we've been trying this for years. Maybe we don't have it in our capacity to change the nature of this relationship. And maybe we're because we're bound by it. And he actually listed like all the different things, like from the Iran hostage crisis to like every time there's been an issue, you know, for the last 40 years between America and Iran. And then at the end of it, he goes, I don't know, I'm not a diplomat, which I thought was really weird because he's the Secretary of State.
Well, I mean, I guess he's not wrong.
Okay, I guess not a career diplomat. Iran went back and forth. So it was apparently not a great meeting. And then this comes about. So they did, I think, expect that this was going to happen. And within an hour of Trump announcing the decertification, Hassan Rouhani, who's the president of Iran, he called Trump's accusations abusive and downright wrong, meaning we are complying with the agreement. He said that, you know what, fine, maybe we'll escalate our conventional weapons programs. We need to defend ourselves. But, you know, one of the things here that's at stake is the fact that, and people don't understand this, like, you know, we, like Iran has, there are generations of Iranians, you know, young Iranians who really want to be part of the global community. They don't want to be, like, they want to have the same kinds of opportunities, global opportunities, but they also want to, like, they want to stop being marginalized and they're ready for it. They're modern, they're smart, they're educated, they have lots of money, they want to invest overseas, they want people to invest in their country. Social media is bringing people together. And this is like a real blow, you know, to the idea that maybe Iran and the United States can actually move forward in their relationship and change the nature of that relationship. It also concerns reformers there because they're like, well, this just gives Iranian hardliners more fodder, right? Like they're gonna be like, see, we told you, you cannot trust United States. They will always be our enemy.
It's unifying Iran and dividing the Western alliance, which is in no way putting us in a position to bargain again. I mean, how are we improving our position here? Like Iran will be unified in that, you know what, America breaks its promises and is being threatening to us. We have to hold together here, whereas we're destroying the alliance that made the pact in the first place.
Well, we also, I mean, where's our credibility? I mean, like, why is there any incentive to enter into any kind of treaty or agreement with the United States when it can be so easily undone? When we're just not worth, you know, our promise is not worth the paper it's written on.
There is none. Again, that's why I think that's probably why I have felt so pessimistic lately. I just don't see how in my lifetime we ever have credibility in the world stage again. This has ruined our ability to take sort of soft power approaches for generations. Why would you trust America to do anything it says it's going to do? Because you know what? We might have 8 years of a good president, but they could like that flip on you and elect a psycho again.
Well, you know who still likes us, even after the Iran stuff, even though much of the world community, including Russia and China, are like, oh, you shouldn't have done this, is United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Israel.
Did you see that tweet today about Schumer? I just saw it briefly, and I'm still confused by it. He tweeted, "Dim Senator Schumer hated the Iran deal made by President Obama, but now that I'm involved, he is okay with it. Tell that to Israel, Chuck."
I'm confused. So he's saying that, wait, can you read that again to me? I need to actually visually see.
He's saying Senator Schumer hated the Iran deal made by President Obama, but now that I'm involved, he's okay with it. Tell that to Israel, Chuck. And I get the first part. It's more of his like, I mean, Schumer did oppose, was not like, fully on board with it. So that's at least true. And like when he was talking about Corker, he's like, Corker orchestrated the deal. No, he opposed it every step of the way.
I guess what he's saying is that Israel is backing me up, the backing up the president. Israel agrees that this agreement needs to be dismantled. And so tell it to Israel. I mean, you know, Chuck Schumer, his state, I mean, like it's heavily populated by American Jews who are also dual citizens of Israel. And he has very close ties to Israel. So maybe that's his, that's almost like a little threat.
Yeah.
That's what I'm reading it at least. What do you think?
I'm just confused, I think. It doesn't...
I think he's saying Israel is my friend and not your friend anymore.
Huh.
Nanny, nanny, boo-boo.
That could be it, actually.
Yeah,
that's
kind of
how his mentality works. So, last couple weeks, there have been a couple scandals that involve Cy Vance. That's actually the New York County District Attorney. He had two very different scandals come up. Both were late issues. But the first one, of course, was Harvey Weinstein.
Okay.
Did you hear about that one at all?
Oh, God, yeah. Are you kidding me? That's all we've been hearing.
Yeah. So in that case, the charges that might have been brought against him mysteriously disappeared after some substantial donations from people connected to him.
That's disgusting.
But that wasn't it. The only thing happened. Also, it came out that the Trump kids had a similar arrangement. In 2012, there were possible criminal charges possibly about to be filed against both Ivanka and Don Jr. For 2 years, the prosecutors in New York had been building a case against them related to their statements they made in connection with Trump Soho, a very shady investment tower in New York. But then, suddenly, Cy Vance comes along and says, no, we can't bring charges here, and it goes away. And nothing happens.
Wait, now, was Cy Vance on the case while they were investigating and
he was
and
the head
developing
of it. He
it?
Makes the final call. He's the head of, yeah. So it was, he used his prosecutorial discretion and said, I don't believe beyond reasonable doubt there's a case here, so we're not going to file it. But the behind the scenes makes it look very, very shady what's really going on here. And let's start with Trump Soho. Trump Soho is a fairly recent development being built supposedly in Soho in New York, but it's actually like on the border there. It's one of those condo hotel things Trump loves. And it was built in conjunction with Bayrock, the organization run by Felix Sater and Tevika Reef, who we've discussed previously on the show are both shady mobsters with ties to Russian criminal organizations. Anyway, Soho is been dogged from the beginning by a lot of problems with its development. Where Cy Vance comes in starts about 2010. What happened is that Trump Soho didn't do as well as the Trumps hoped. They weren't selling units at a speed they wanted to. And part of that is because who the hell wants a hotel condo anyway? Basically, the whole deal was you could stay, if you bought one of these units, you could stay there only 120 days per year. And the rest, Trump got to run it as a hotel room. So you didn't really own it. It was more like a timeshare in a hotel.
It's a very expensive timeshare.
Yeah. So by the time of the opening of Soho, something of like only 20% of the units in the entire building have been sold.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's a problem because how are you going to build a building without any down deposits? That's when Ivanka and Don Jr. start promoting the tower by claiming that, you know, in excess of 60% of units have been sold. It was a lie, wasn't true. And that's what brought the New York prosecutors their way after a civil suit was filed based on those misrepresentations. I mean, the question here is the legal issue, I guess, is it puffery? Is it like the mere, you know, sales jargon? Or is it in fact a lie that's actionable as fraud or a criminal offense? And here, the prosecutors had emails showing that the Trumps, Ivanka and Don Jr. in particular, knew exactly what they were doing, that they were using fake inflated figures to try and sell these condos and try to entice more buyers to prop up a nearly failing venture.
That sounds like straight up fraud to me.
Yeah, it's straight up fraud. Like literally, and the whole, I should do an episode on the Soho at some point because it's a crazy story from start to finish with a lot of foreign money coming in. Like the mayor of a major, the capital of Kazakhstan also happens to have like 4 units there.
Kazakhstan.
It's a money laundering thing. Straight up. Like that's
totally
what Trump Soho is.
Yeah.
Mueller is interested in Soho because it's straight up money laundering. So 2010 to 2012, this case is ongoing. Nothing is going forward, but the prosecutors aren't dropping it. Suddenly, early 2012, Trump's personal attorney, Mark Kasowitz, donates $25,000 to Vance, who is, again, the head of the prosecutors looking into this case.
To his campaign.
To his re-election campaign, which is actually in a couple weeks, unfortunately, and there's no one really running against him. And then Kasowitz comes on as the attorney for this case. Now, Kasowitz is a civil litigator. He does civil litigation. He does not do, like, white-collar criminal defense matters. So I don't know why you'd want him brought on to this case where your children might get criminally indicted. And when Kasowitz comes on to the case, Vance returns the $25,000 donation that he'd given per their policy. If people before you gave money, you give it back. And that $25,000 had made Kasowitz one of the major donors to Vance's campaign. Then in May of 2012, Vance and Kasowitz have a little sit-down, talk about the case, rehash the facts, go over it. as far as we know, there's nothing at all different from the past 2 years that was brought up. No new arguments, no new plan, no new facts. It's just a little face-to-face chat. And then 3 months later, Vance says, I can't make a case here, and gets rid of it and kills it. Then, very end of that year, Kathwitz makes a new donation to Vance, this time for $50,000.
Okay. I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Yeah. Okay. Shit.
So, yeah. I mean, the timing and the facts look really bad. $25,000 given. Kathwitz then comes in the case. It was already existing before the donation was ever made. The money does go back to him.
That just looks like a straight-off payoff. That's like straight-up straight-up payoff.
Yeah.
How does Cy Vance still have a license to...
Because the Supreme Court nuked our rules of bribery, and it's basically impossible to win a conviction on this.
Great.
So, yes, it looks terrible. And again, this is not the only case where it's happened. What I found interesting, though, is just how representative this is of Trump business in general. Now, there's a lot of variations on Trump schemes, but this whole fraudulent claims about number of units sold is ubiquitous through all their towers all over the world. And again, as I've been looking into sort of the towers that Trump built and tried to build, this same pattern repeats. For instance, let's take Trump Cap Cana. That was a Dominican Republic development that started back in, 2005? It never happened. It died. It blew up. There was lots of lawsuits, lots of money lost. The only person who really made money there was Trump. But looking at the sales record there, as with many of his properties, Trump.org released a press release about Cap Cana where he said, it has the record of sale in a single day of the whole Caribbean. He managed to sell 68 lots of Cap Cana, an exclusive residential neighborhood of Punta Cana, for US$368 million. And they claimed that this was 95% of the total units for sale. Now, that's hard to argue with based on just what they're saying at the time, but luckily for us, lawsuits resulted from this failed venture. And in discovery, Trump was forced to produce documents showing what had actually been sold. It turns out that 95% figure that he was citing was just made up. It didn't happen.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So what we know is that for years and years and years, Trump was using this Cap Cana single day sales record to promote other properties around the world, and say, hey, look, buy my properties. Look how well I did in Cap Cana. Look how much money we brought in. Look how much we did. You should join our other investors for other Trump brand properties. Look how safe it is to do this. And then it turns out the total sale price was actually about $110 million less than they were claiming. And many of the units remained unsold and never did get sold. And in fact, the whole business failed. And why it failed is intriguing because there's a reason that Trump and only Trump got paid. Again, Cap Cana did start getting off the ground during the financial crisis. So there were external issues happening. And with all of Trump's properties where he's the licensor, what typically happens is buyers put a down payment down. The down payments are used to fund the building or the resort.
Right.
And once it's completed, they close out, give all the rest of the money, everyone goes home, yay. But unless you get down payments, you can't build. You need that money to actually have a building at all. Which, again, is why they're always lying about how many units have been sold. Because if you invest in a property that never gets off the ground, you lose your down payment. So Cap Cana almost got the ground. It needed about $170 million down payments to get going. And they almost hit that number, despite the fact that there was the massive economic crisis, a lot of bad factors against them, and they could have gone ahead. Except Trump decided he hadn't been paid enough yet. Wow. Even though there's no building, nothing had happened, he decided that under the terms of his license deal, even the sales that had been made but fell through entitled him to a cut of his licensing fee. I think it was $10 million. But at that point, paying off Trump killed the entire deal, which means everyone who invested lost their money. Wow. Cap Cana was never created, and the whole thing ceased to exist. But Trump made up with his usual fee. That's the problem with the way Trump operates in these licensing organizations or licensing plans, because
this is a total scam.
It is. He has no incentive for many of the ways the deal is structured to actually see it get off the ground. He gets his money when the units are sold, down payments made, and he gets it just for signing the basic agreement in the first place.
But here's my question. Susan, how does somebody get away with this over and over and over? I mean, okay, if somebody does this, once, you take your investment. How many investors can you tap again and again with a new project? Okay, just to get my licensing fee or just to get some money off the top and then the rest of it. How does he keep managing to find people to do this? Unless, you said, there are folks who just need to launder their money and so it's a way
for them. Fort Lauderdale, Baja, Mexico, Philadelphia,
damn,
New Orleans, Hawaii. The number of failed units or failed projects that Trump never even got built, but he made tens of millions off of, at least half a dozen, probably a dozen off the top of my head. And most of those result in very substantial civil suits from lots of people who lost lots of money. Because in all those cases, like in Mexico, lots of hundreds of millions of dollars were put down on it, but never enough was raised, so the whole thing went kaput, and people lost all their money. And Trump always gets away. I mean, he does settle the civil suits, but the criminal suits never seem to arise, which is intriguing because we know twice now, when facing criminal indictments, possibly because of his fraudulent conduct in these businesses, Trump.org or his attorneys, or one case, like the Trump Foundation, his charity, made substantial donations to the chief prosecutors in jurisdictions pondering charges against him. And in two of those cases, shortly thereafter, all charges were dropped. That's Florida for Pam Bondi and also New York for Cy Vance. And Trump's on the record saying, you know what? When people call for money, when these politicians call for money, I give. And then two or three years later, when I sing, I call them and they give me what I need.
Wow.
That's how he gets away with having multiple fraudulent ventures over the course of a decade.
And it's not like the DOJ is going to like investigate these people, because
I don't know why they could. I have no idea why there's never been federal action here, because
they wouldn't now.
It would be an easy
under
case.
Sessions,
well,
right?
Yeah.
Under Sessions, okay, they won't do it. But
in the previous, like,
right,
since like 2002. And again, there's so much going wrong with the Trump organization that it's hard to understand how we got here today.
There is no better time than the fall, this my favorite season, to cozy up to an incredible cup of coffee. And just this year, I have discovered what is now my favorite coffee. And I've never even been a big coffee drinker, but I am now, because I discovered Blue Bottle Coffee, and it's incredible. Blue Bottle is not just any coffee. They have an insane dedication to coffee, and they take freshness very seriously. But they also work directly with farmers all over the world to source the most delicious and sustainable coffee they can find. For example, one of my favorites now comes from El Salvador, and it's called Kilimanjaro. This coffee is actually perfect for this season. It has notes of apple cider, tangerine, and maple candy. In your coffee, people. It's delicious, and it's got a whole story behind it. This particular coffee bean originates in Kenya, and it was planted for the first time ever in El Salvador by a lady named Ida Botley, and she did this in an attempt to revive her family farm, which was ailing, and it turned into an award-winning coffee, winning the Cup of Excellence, and believe me, you have to give it a try at Blue Bottle. But if maple candy and tangerine and these notes are not your flavor, well, they have something for everybody's palate, from like, you know, lighter fruit-forward profiles to really deep chocolatey espressos. Now, I've had a lot of coffee in my day, which, to be honest, is why I've never been a big fan. I mean, to me, coffee has been coffee, but Blue Bottle is without question the freshest, most delicious coffee I have ever tasted. So try it yourself. Sign up right now for a free trial of fresh, delicious Blue Bottle coffee at bluebottlecoffee.com/45. You've got nothing to lose, because it's a free trial, people. That's bluebottlecoffee.com/45. When you order your coffee, it's going to arrive at your home at peak freshness, okay? They roast it, they grind it, they send it right to you. There is no sitting on a dusty shelf for weeks. So get your free trial today, once again, at bluebottlecoffee.com/45.
Going back to Trump Soho. Now remember, that's Bayrock. That is Felix Sater. Felix Sater is getting shady money from Iceland, where a lot of Russians were investing in the banks there, to prop up this failing venture. And Soho was a mess. Like, someone died during construction. There was lots of like false claims about the sales. Everything went wrong. During that whole time, Felix Sater was an active FBI informant. He was working regularly with the FBI to help them get intel and help with give them the goods on money laundering schemes and stuff. So the government knew. They had to have known. I have to believe they know, because there's no way they couldn't have known. But their informant was engaged in a new shady, massive multiple hundred million dollar scheme, and they turned the other way. I'm not even suggesting things. I don't understand how.
That's the question.
I have no theory to explain that. It's just bizarre and inexplicable. But again and again, things that can't be true.
Unless Felix Sater is like a double triple agent or something like that.
Felix Sater is a scam artist to the highest degree.
He's really working for the government and or the feds, and he's actually going to.
The feds thought he. I do believe the feds thought he was working for them.
I don't know. Or a lot of greasy palms. A lot of people are getting paid off. I mean, like, that's the only other explanation of how it can go on to this extent.
So, and this is not the, I mean, there's many other examples of this, but Hawaii, for instance, Trump Waikiki, which is, I think they had to rename it because it was originally called, like, Trump Hawaii, like, Ocean Waikiki. And then they had to call it, like, Waikiki Beach Walk because it wasn't actually on the ocean. And again, they claimed that they had the highest one-day sales total for any sort of, development project, and claim that this philosophy, the Trump philosophy that is, has produced a track record of success as witnessed at Trump Waikiki, where 464 suites sold, setting a new single day record worldwide. Of course, you actually look at that building and what happened there, and again, by the time they actually started construction on the building and got it up, there were not all units sold out. In fact, as of November 2009, when the tower opened, only 101 buyers closed. So again, false claims, puffery, vastly inflated statements about what actually sold, what not as sold.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even inflated. This is an outright lie. That's the thing. I mean, to me, puffery is like, this face lotion will make you glow, right? I mean, it's not an outright lie. Yeah. It might make you glow, but these are hard and fast figures, right? Like they're just complete lies. And so
there's no like room for like opinion here. It's like how many were sold that you're saying were sold, how many were actually sold. I mean,
so what do you think's gonna happen with the Trump kids and Cy Vance stuff? Is this something that could be brought up again? Like it's over, gone. Like that investigation cannot be.
It could. I mean, it's not like there's no like double jeopardy issue there. It could be. It's not gonna be.
But it's something Mueller can do something. Mueller can. But this is something that Mueller could do something about.
Honestly, I feel like the money laundering issues there far outweigh the
puffery,
basic fraud.
Yeah.
I went through this phase where I was looking at all of these developments that Trump had and tracking this and just watching in real time as the Trump kid, most of the Trump kids at this point, just outright lied about how many units were sold. When if you compare the actual development records, you can see that everything they're saying wasn't true. For instance, the current Uruguay project, Trump Punta del Este, again, Eric, this is Eric's baby. He's been down there like once or twice a year for the past like nearly 6 years now, claiming that so and so number of units are sold. But if you compare with the actual records available, he's usually like 50% higher than what's really been sold. And then, you know, it's not, he's making the statements in America too. So that is, it's not necessarily just a foreign problem.
Right. I wonder if those civil suits actually, I mean, like at the end of the day, if they're losing money every time they do this, is he still making away with enough that he is still worth the civil suits? Do you know like how much he's had to pay off?
Well, so the civil suits aren't necessarily even involving Trump. A lot of them do. A lot of them involve that Trump's false claims of being a developer for these projects. But Trump's the licensor. He isn't actually the developer. He's the one, he's going to
get
cut.
Sued. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not always him on the line for this stuff. It, again, goes back to my current state of pessimism. We've known this for years. It's been open for years. Everyone knows that Trump's a liar. Everyone knows that Trump does shady business deals where he makes up things, claims things that aren't true, gets his cut, and leaves everyone else losing hundreds of millions for his, like, $10 million gain. So you know what? Proving that doesn't need to be done because it's been proven again and again and again, and no one cares. I feel like it's also worth noting that it's not just these stupid towers that Trump's gotten involved in. He's had plenty of other kind of business schemes too.
The stakes and the water and the ties.
Oh God, yeah. But also, have you heard of Trump's vitamin P pyramid scheme?
No. Oh God, no.
Yeah, the Trump Network. Trump actually had a business where you peed in a cup, sent it to Trump, or Trump's scientist. They did some evaluation on it. And they sent you a personalized, they sent you a personalized vitamin regime based on your pee.
Wow.
This was a thing that our president did not too long ago. And it was all made up, obviously. It's not a real thing that you can actually do. But, you know, our president ran a pee pyramid scheme.
For a second, though, I thought, if that works, that actually is kind of makes sense to me. But knowing Trump, they just dumped all the pee out and, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was a pre-existing scheme that, like, someone else had done and try to run, and then they go to Trump and say, hey, if you put your name in our peace scheme, it'll get better sales. That's all that happened.
He licensed his name to the peace scheme.
That's what it's like. I mean, it's not the same business, obviously, as a tower development, but the basic foundations of it are the same for all of these.
Well, Trump University. I mean, yeah. Same thing over and over and over. He is one massive con man.
Yes.
Yeah. And pretty much everything he does. Is there, okay, maybe it's easier to try to figure out, is there one business that he's actually done, like, legitimately, without any kind of fraud?
I tried that. Like the ones he's done from the ground up, no. Occasionally he has a licensing deal that, I can't even think of an example. I know there's been at least one or two times where he's had a licensing deal where things went okay. I can't name them. I should be able to.
No, no bankruptcies, no nothing, yeah.
And you know what? His older deals were a little more normal shady. But hitting the 2000s is when things really started to get off the rockers.
I wonder if that's because his kids all got involved. Then. I mean, I don't know.
Or he met Bayrock. I don't know if that's a chicken and the egg situation.
Right.
But once he got in this licensing deal, he never looked back.
All right. Well, you know, when you said something about how Trump just, you know, does these things, walks away and lets the pieces fall, it actually kind of reminded me of what he said this past week when he signed the executive order on healthcare. He almost walked out of the room. He did his whole, we're going to do this executive order and I'm whatever, shook some hands. And he started walking out, but Pence grabbed him and said, you haven't signed it yet. You know, he's done this before when he tries to walk away without actually signing these orders. And as he was walking back to sign it, he kind of laughed and said, oops. And he goes, he's like, I'm happy to sign this. It doesn't cost me anything. And it kind of reminds me of like what's happening, what you just mentioned, because it's true. It's not going to cost him anything, but it's going to cost a lot of other people a lot. It's going to cost lives, in fact, and along with tons and tons of money. So two things happened on this past week. He did sign an executive order in which he made some significant changes to change some of the regulatory requirements that Obamacare had put into place. And then a few hours later, he announces that he's going to end Obamacare's cost-sharing reduction payments. And that's a system that the government subsidizes insurers to help keep costs low for about 6 million low-income Americans, you know, so they can get their insurance. Like, they cannot pay the premium, so the government has been, under Obamacare, been subsidizing this. These are called the CSRs, and he's going to eliminate it like immediately. Now, let's talk a little bit about first the executive order itself. I'm not going to get too deep into this. I feel like, you know, I'd love to have a healthcare policy expert to talk about this in more depth because this, again, is not my field. But from what I understand, the executive order does a couple of things. It number one, and according to the New Yorker, a great article in New Yorker, it could allow for a lot of fraud in the healthcare system. One of the things that's considered is that it allows the sale of insurance plans that don't meet basic standards through these healthcare associations. And that association can be made up of all kinds of groups. It could be employers, interest groups, even entrepreneurs. They can come together, form this association, and allow people to buy healthcare through it. But the healthcare they sell would not have to have
it's exactly like these, the policies requiring decent
exactly
care.
Like essentials, right? Like, it wouldn't cover some of the essentials. It could be anything, right? Because so the ACA, Obamacare, made it harder for insurers, employers to claim they were covering people, but something like this could actually allow people to sell plans that actually don't cover shit. So that's one issue. Another issue is about allowing people to have temporary plans, like if they're in a transition period. Obamacare said you have 3 months to get onto a, you know, a permanent plan. This extends that further out for a year. So, you know, it, now you can argue, well, that might be helpful for some people, but it also, I guess, takes away the incentive to then get onto a permanent plan. But as far as the CSR payments that are going to be taken away, you know, there has been an analysis by the CBO, and it said that basically what's going to happen is next year, like, this is like an immediate impact. Next year, premiums are going to rise 20%, 25% by 2020, and our budget deficit is actually going to increase by $194 billion over the next 10 years. Now, I thought it was really kind of gross to hear. I mean, Trump just doesn't give a crap. I think he wants this to implode. You know what was interesting? After he did this, like literally the next morning, like at 5 a.m., he tweets out this crazy ass tweet. The Democrats' Obamacare is imploding. Now, this is after he signs his order and then says, I'm taking away these payments. The Democrats' Obamacare is imploding. Massive subsidy payments to their pet insurance companies has stopped. Dems should call me to fix.
So he like said. Yeah. This is his strategy. It's always been his strategy. Same with the towers. He does not put his own money in. He puts his name on it and no money. And he gets others to put their money and their lives on the line. And then he threatens to destroy it and says, pay me more or you lose everything. Now, he, if, you know, it doesn't work out, no
extortion.
Back.
It's extortion.
He still has money. But the person on the other side of the deal, they're in trouble. Like, they have to either lose their down deposit on the building or lose healthcare for America. So they're motivated to go back and deal. And that is what Trump thinks is a good negotiating tactic.
Well, I mean, what do you think he's trying to negotiate with here? Congress? He's trying to get Congress to, like, pass something that will just basically get rid of Obamacare and do a real repeal and replace? Or I just think now at this point, he just wants to sabotage Obamacare. He wants it to implode. He's like, it's not imploding on its own, so let me make sure it does.
He doesn't know healthcare. He doesn't know policy. He has no preferences, really. What he thinks he understands is leverage. He thinks that's what he knows how to do. So he's trying to get leverage to do something he's not really sure about. Like, he doesn't really care what gets done with it. But he thinks he can force people to do something that he wants, whatever it is he wants, if he blows up healthcare for Americans.
Well, he doesn't care that he's blowing it up. And, you know,
Oh, he does. He cares very much because that means he's a better negotiating position.
Well, I mean, okay, but I'm talking about Americans. I'm talking about people who are actually going to be on the end of, you know, the 6 million who are no longer going to be able to maybe get insurance because those subsidies aren't available. The 20% premiums that are going to increase, and even the average person maybe can't afford to, like, spend that. I mean, like, so...
And that's their problem.
That's, I guess it is. Well, Mick Mulvaney, who's the White House budget director, said, if the insurance companies want to try and raise their rates because they're no longer getting a bailout, that's their problem. It's not the insurance company's problem. It is the people who are getting insurance. It's their problem. It's people who have medical issues. It's their problem. And I mean, apparently there are states that are filing lawsuits to prevent, at least to stop stopping those subsidy payments. But it doesn't, I don't know if they really have a legal leg to stand on because there was no appropriations made for those subsidies to begin with. In fact, there's actually an internal challenge. There were some House Republicans who had challenged that provision in Obamacare legally.
Well, that's an appeal. Yeah. No, it's a legal clusterfuck. And I'm not going to pretend to have an opinion on the legal interests here. It's a very complicated separation of powers issue. There's no easy answers here. But Trump's just blowing all this shit up, making the actual litigation kind of meaningless in the face of all this chaos.
Yeah. And all of this happened in a week, in the last week.
Yes. Well, that's all for...
Yep, that's all for this week, and we'll be back next week. And thanks for listening.
And I will try to be less dire about the state of America next week.
I know, maybe you need another vacation. Maybe, like, every week should be a vacation, at least a vacation on social media, but we have to keep coming back to this shit. So hopefully we'll all still be around, and North Korea will not hurt Guam in the meantime. Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible, and I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products, and thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345. And you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.